Welcome to issue 9 of Behind the Panels, the comic book podcast that reboots after every crisis. I'm one of your hosts, Richard Gray.
And I'm your other host, David McVeigh. How are you, Richard?
I'm excellent. We also have a very special message this week, because this is our Christmas episode. We have a very special message from Superman.
Hello, everyone. This is Superman, bringing you best wishes for a very Merry Christmas from Lois Lane, Perry White, Jimmy Olsen, and myself.
Why, thank you, Superman.
That was the wibbly wobbly tummy wimey bits. That came from us from the end of the Second World War.
So, really fantastic. Yeah, we should at this point say that, you know, we are only 9 issues in, but we did start just before the holiday season. And we will say that a very happy holidays and Merry Christmas to all of our listeners. And for our Christmas, for this lovely Christmas, we are doing Batman Noel this week.
Yeah, and we were so lucky that we just started this podcast, and as we approach Christmas, they DC released this lovely book. So
this lovely Christmas book. So I thought, cool.
And because it's Christmas,
a freeze is coming.
Unless you live in Australia.
Well, that's true. And if you haven't guessed already, I have my own soundboard.
It's going to be the dueling soundboards today.
Little pond.
You have a lot to learn, my
little
pond.
Oh, good for you.
Oh, it's going to be a long night, people. Can I just tell you, it's going to be a long night.
Should we just jump straight into what we've been reading then?
Why not? So what we've been reading, so we need something for that. We don't have a theme for this.
We don't have a theme for
this. So haven't we just...
What you've been reading? We've been reading this week. What you've been reading? Let's read this week. What?
How about this one?
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
Yes.
There you go.
Mine was impromptu and inspired, I thought.
I thought so too, but, you know, whatever. All right, Richard, what have you been reading this week?
Well, look, for two reasons. One, because we're reading Batman Noel this week, I actually finally got around to, and plus your wonderful recommendation for it last week, Brian Azzarello's Joker.
Oh, yes.
and can I just say, look, I mean, this is, it's 100 and something pages, 100 and... 130-odd pages,
Something like that, yeah. It's an amazing read.
Look, it's an amazing piece of art. It's an amazing story. I sat down and read this in one sitting. It's just such a compelling story, and it's kind of the... I'd love to see this as a film, but then on the other hand, it works so well as a comic as well. It doesn't really need to be adapted because it is so visual. As we spoke about in the past, the Joker character is like virtually, you know, based on... Heath Ledger's portrayal, right, with the scars running right up his side. All the characters, as Cam mentioned when he was on here a few weeks ago, that's Cameron Williams from Popcorn Junkies. He, you know, all the characters feel as though they can be, would exist in a real world. Like, for example, Christopher Nolan's Batman universe. You mentioned
there's a sense of realism to all of these characters. They're living people. They're not fantastical.
Exactly. Killer Croc and the Riddler turn up, but they feel like, you know, they'd slot nicely into a...
And Cam's so right. The Riddler comes across like some sort of coked out rock star.
He's great. I love it. I'd love to see if they introduce the Riddler into the film. So I'd love to see him done like that. But yeah. Of course, this is the next Batman film is the last Christopher Nolan one, but I hope they keep that dark edge. I love the introduction of Harley Quinn as well in there. Look, the artwork is beautiful. It's photorealistic on some pages. Other pages, it emphasizes the comic book qualities of it.
Now, that one's also drawn by Lee Bermejo, who did Batman Noel. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah. So, and it may have led to, and we're going to say up front, we made a mistake in saying that Brian Azzarello wrote Batman Noel when we were talking about it last week. He didn't. I think our confusion, we're convinced that we saw this in an earlier solicitation.
I'm going to find this. I feel like somebody's having a massive joke on me.
But exactly. No, I feel the same way too. But the confusion may have come around the fact that Lee Bermejo drew both titles, and he's written Batman Noel as well. But look, it's a beautifully drawn book by Lee Bermejo, and it's stunningly written as well by Brian Azzarello. It's just such a compelling story because it's, you know, it's set in the Batman universe. He only turns up in the last 10 pages or so. And so you're transfixed by... Well, our lead into this world is Johnny Frost, but it's really Joker's story.
Yeah, and it's really interesting because you can draw a parallel to a real world, because the book opens with Joker basically walking out of Arkham Asylum, a free man, not escaping, walking out a free man, and being picked up by Johnny, what's his name again? Johnny Frost, who's basically his wheelman for the next couple of nights. But what the real world parallel here is, it almost feels like some criminal getting out of jail and going on some coked out, frenzied rampage across the city, basically, where it's like they're going from location to location to location, trying to piece together their old crime empire. And in the case of Joker, he's insane. But in the case of the analogy I'm drawing, you know, that's the person who gets out and just does nothing but snort cocaine to the point where they're just like on edge the entire time. And it kind of feels like that. It's got this kind of weird, sleazy Michael Mann feel where they're just kind of driving around the streets all night long, you know? And it's like, you know, this idea that you never quite know where you're going. He's just kind of just cruising for the sake of cruising.
Yeah, and as weird and violent and as erratic as he is, you almost believe what Johnny Frost believes, which is that, you know, you can be a part of this world, you know, you know, that the Joker is not what we thought he is. But then, of course, when it all comes crashing down around him, you realize the Joker is exactly the disease, as they call him, that we always thought he was.
Yeah.
And there's only one cure for that disease, and that's the bat. And that's always been the way in Gotham. There's always been a Batman of some kind. There's always been a Joker.
Yeah.
You know? And I think it's just such a perfect one-off, a capsule story that could fit into any version of the Batman universe.
As is our book of the week this week with Batman Noel. Absolutely. And we'll come back to that a little bit later in the show. But these are amazing graphic novels. These are just these standalone stories where you just read them and you just go, wow, that's just an amazing piece of writing. You know, and like Batman Noel, you were talking about Joker sitting in one sitting. I read Noel in one sitting.
And, yeah, no, I virtually did as well for
that
one.
It just flowed so easily.
It's a mainly visual book, which we'll talk about. The other things I've been reading, just quickly I'll mention, I read the Batgirl run, which I'm quite enjoying. I didn't think I was going to, because I was a huge Birds of Prey fan for years, and you know, I really liked the Barbara Gordon character in that, so I didn't know how I would like her returning to being Batgirl.
Right.
But it's very much kind of like because she's learning to be Batgirl again. She's making all these rookie mistakes. So
yeah, I'm actually quite enjoying Batgirl. I'm actually enjoying some of the sub Batman books more than I'm enjoying the Batman books themselves.
Yeah. No, I tend to agree with you that I haven't caught up with Nightwing yet, but
Nightwing's an interesting little story.
Batman is the one I'm enjoying the most out of all the principal Bat books.
Yeah.
I also caught up, because last week I mentioned I was really liking Animal Man, and I was wondering what else has Jeff Lemire written. And he wrote a title called Sweet Tooth many years ago, but he's also doing, in the New 52, he's also doing Frankenstein.
Oh, okay.
Agent of Shade. And there are a few parallels between the two. Which I don't like as much.
Yeah, Frankenstein has left me a little cold. I've read the first couple, and I've kind of gone, I just don't know if this is interesting enough to continue on with.
I just finished reading issue 3, and it's a little bit more interesting because they've gone to this planet.
Yeah,
the planet seems to be crying out for help. I find bits of it interesting. I find the characters more fascinating than the way they're being presented.
I do like the relationship between Frankenstein and the scientist who's in the little girl's body.
Yes, exactly. And I'm fascinated by
calls her father, you know?
Yeah, father. I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's been written well enough for me to really crack it at the moment. I'm really liking Green Lantern. I've got to say, I read the fourth issue, and it's...
I haven't read the fourth yet. Don't spoil it for me, because
I won't spoil it. No. But
I want to know what happens. Yeah. Because issue 3 ended on a doozy.
Oh, it did, and I'm not going to spoil that for a second. But it is a good. It does keep the momentum going, and you know, look, Geoff Johns has been at some of his best work, writing on Green Lantern over the last few years, and you know this title's no exception. He's just kept the momentum going of one of the most epic DC books of the last few years.
Yeah, you mentioned last week that you actually never came back to it. I just want to actually come back to it. You actually said something about the fact that you're not actually enjoying the Justice League.
Yeah, and I said that because for a very particular reason, which was that it's not my Justice League yet. And I don't – but I think the reason I always bought a Justice League book was not because I particularly was interested in knowing how they all came together and all that kind of thing. I wanted to and, you know, there have been a few reteam kind of things there. I just like having a Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern book that came out once a month. It's the ultimate superhero mashup. It's what you want. It's the reason we're looking forward to the Avengers next year.
Exactly. The Justice League is the DC Comics equivalent of Marvel's Avengers. It's where we put all the heavy hitters in one place and throw them up against really big bad things. You know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely. Now, like I don't like. And I think that some of the portrayals are at odds with what we're seeing in the other titles. So at the moment, it's kind of like this incongruous title that's sitting out there away from my favorite Batman book at the moment and away from my favorite Superman book at the moment. It's not sitting there joining up with either of those two things. So I don't kind of have this idealized version of Superman. This idealized version of Batman that are playing in the ultimate superhero team, it's still them all finding their way. So I'm also still trying to find my way with this book. It's not there for me yet because they're not fully formed characters yet. They're right. not.
Yeah,
you know,
no, that's fair. The fact that it's like 5 years in the past really threw us. So
yeah. And so for some, so I'm not finding it like as the writing is itself. I mean, look, at the end of issue 3 of Justice League, Aquaman was introduced. So I've not read. I don't know if issue 4 is out yet. But
not
as
yet,
we've said,
yeah.
Aquaman's been our favorite surprise of this run. So maybe his presence will. And God, you know, we never thought we'd say this ever, but his presence might boost. But Aquaman seems to be set in a different timeline as well.
Yeah, look,
so.
The fact that Aquaman can be the saving grace of anything is just—it's just weird. There's something very wrong with the universe at this point.
It's weird, but look, you know, I'm enjoying. Like, I'm really, really kind of paring it down. Like, I'm reading far more Bat books than I've ever read in my life. I think. All I needed was a jumping on point, and I'm kind of hooked. I've always been a Batman fan, but never really collected. And then now with this new 52, I'm finding that I'm actually taking the time to read them all and finding little nuances that the different writers can bring to them. And for the most part, I'm enjoying a lot of them. But as you said, the sub-Batman books, really enjoying those a lot more. So I like the world. I like this new Gotham, and I'm kind of intrigued by the Batman Inc. concept that's running through us.
And I love some of those sub-characters. I love Catwoman. I think Catwoman is it's a dark and sexy title. It really is.
I was going to say sexy is a good word there. I mean, apart from the fact that she spent the first two issues having sex with Batman.
That's part of it.
that's part of it. But the whole thing is a sexy book because it is that little edge, and it's the kind of thing that the Catwoman movie never really got.
Oh, the Catwoman movie. We don't even mention the Catwoman movie.
Catwoman movie was terrible. But the closest we've got, I mean, some interesting. I really like from what we've seen. We'll play the trailer later in the show, but the new Dark Knight trailer shows Anne Hathaway as Selina Kyle, and it's kind of that sort of sexy, smart edge to the character that the book is bringing at the moment.
Yeah,
I really like that.
Look, the Catwoman film directed by the French guy. What was his name?
I forgot everything about the Catwoman.
Our esteemed co-host Josh on the film show. You know how he reacts every time we mention X-Men Wolverine. I would actually watch Wolverine 5 times over than watch
piss off.
Catwoman again. God, I mean Catwoman. It was awful. It's just awful.
Piss off.
Sorry?
Pitoff was the name of the director.
Pitoff. I thought you were telling me to piss off there.
Pitoff.
So I'd rather watch, I mean, I'd watch X-Men Origins Wolverine any day over Catwoman. I mean, Catwoman was just terrible.
Catwoman was bad. It had pretty much everything I hate about, all the things I hate in bad movies were all in that one film.
Yeah, and look, and you know, Halle Berry is a sexy, sexy woman. And everybody talked about, the shredded costume and, you know, how much skin it was showing. And yet it was the most unsexy costume.
It was. It really was. And then you look at the current Catwoman titles where she's virtually covered head to toe.
Yep.
And it is still the sexiest costume in
the entire DC. Well, you look at Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns with the head-to-toe vinyl, and yet, oh, my God.
Yeah, and that's we're seeing the same thing with...
with Selena, with the new film. Anne Hathaway, absolutely.
Yeah, because it's basically neck-to-toe vinyl.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So, yeah, I think it's not about tears and seeing bits of skin. It's about how it's carried. And
yes.
Halle Berry just did not carry it well.
Okay, and David, what have you been reading, by the way?
I've actually been continuing on with Powers, funnily enough. I'm a little bit obsessed. I'm actually now almost finished the complete volume one. I'm actually up to issue 30, I think it's like 33, 34. It's a really interesting book because it goes into some very different areas. After that first arc that we read, it goes into some very different places. The last main arc of the first volume, prior to this kind of reboot thing that goes on in the last few issues, is basically a riff on Justice League. And it's a riff on this supergroup called Unity that actually has the Unity Hall of Justice and the whole bit. And these are like the class 9 superheroes, so they're like the top of the range, but they all hate each other. And they've basically broken up, and they don't speak to each other. And the case actually involves the fact that their Batman type character, who is a rich senator who actually has no superpowers but is highly trained and wears costumes and had a sidekick named Wing, is murdered. And it's all about trying to find out who murdered him. And he's murdered right after a sex scandal where he's revealed on the news as urinating on a young girl dressed as Wing. it goes into some dirty, dirty places. But it's a really fascinating thing because it's all about, you scratch the surface and, they all actually hate each other and they don't actually work as a group anymore. And it's all become a media franchise where they make lots of money off action figures and all this. And it's a really, really good arc and it goes on for a while. But it also touches on territory that is covered by the indie book Irredeemable, which is something we're going to do on this show at some point.
Definitely.
Because Irredeemable is actually one of my favorite comic series, which is basically posing a question, which is, what if Superman went bad? What if Superman one day woke up and said, "F*** everybody"? Whoops, excuse me, I'll beep that out. You get the point, though. Where he basically says, stuff the world, and I'm going to lay waste to everything in place. And he's a god and he can do this. And this episode, these issues of Powers kind of does that same thing, where one of their members is this character who is literally a god who basically just starts laying rampage, just laying waste to whole areas. And the police officers basically are posing this question, what can we do? There is nothing we can do in this situation. He literally levels a city in Utah. And you go, what can you do? It's like he's a apparently class 9 level superhero, which is the highest level you can get. But it turns out, according to the Unity people, they've actually been covering it up and they actually have no idea what class he is.
Wow.
So it goes into all these very, very dark areas and these really, really intricate cases. I'm really loving this series. I can't tell you how much I'm loving Powers. I love the characters and I love the dialogue interchanges with these characters. And I love what Brian Michael Bendis is doing with kind of subverting and bending the superhero genre. And very thinly veiled on real people, real characters out there in the real comic book world.
And I think it's great because, like, he's got the major heroes working, obviously, over in the Marvel U.
Yeah,
he can do that, but then very much subvert that. I think it's a great two sides of Brian Michael Bendis's brain.
And it's obviously become a successful enough book that they can now experiment, because the last few issues I've been reading at the moment, I'm literally scratching my head.
Right.
Because it basically, they finish off the Unity story and they go a brand new story arc. And this is like the very end of volume one. And it starts with cavemen.
Right.
And the entire issue, without a word being spoken, is cavemen fighting each other. And then the next issue is like medieval times. And it's almost the same.
Check the cover again, David.
It's building, because over the last four issues, it's getting closer and closer in time. We're now in the 30s. And what it is the progression of Walker. And we're actually right. seeing his history, and what we're finding out is he's actually ancient. And right. But he doesn't remember any of his past because every 100 years he forgets.
Right, because they allude to that in the Who Killed Retro Girl
That's
story.
That's right. And so we've got this, we're seeing his history, and we've actually, in the 30s issue that I'm reading at the moment, he's talking to Einstein about his powers.
Basically right, saying, yeah, it's right, because they're saying the same thing about, because Retro Girl was apparently someone that was reborn every...
That's right. You know, so it took them like 4 issues to get here, and we went through these issues where they're cavemen fighting, and you're going, what the hell are they doing?
Well, that sounds terrific. I'll have to catch up.
Yeah, it absolutely is well worth having a look at. And look, I know I'm obsessing over about one comic, but it is just, it's really caught me. It's really caught
You're
me.
Allowed, David.
Thank you. All right, let's get on to some comic news. What do you think?
Let's do that. Look, there's not a lot this week. It's slim pickings. We're getting towards the
end. Hang on. And you created it. How could you forget?
I know, I always forget.
What a scoop!
Yes!
All right, so yes. You always
as some guy before that jingle, who wasn't me, was saying, there's not a lot of news this week.
Okay, fair enough.
you just jumped in there because you completely forgot about the jingle.
It's going to make a drinking game out of forgetting jingles, I think.
have you had your jingle this week? All right, there's not a lot this week. We're winding down towards the end of the year, so I thought I'd just pull out a couple of... really light stories, and they're both Marvel related this week. The first one is that Marvel is ending its current line of kids comics, but the thing is ending with March's solicitations, but apparently there's going to be a reboot of
them. Now, the kids comics, is this like Spider-Man and Friends and stuff like that?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
And stuff like that, yeah. Right. They're all ages comics.
You know, it's funny because of who my age and my son likes to read the stuff I read, I can't remember the last time I read a kid's Marvel comic book.
Because I think that they're probably – like they created them for a good reason, which was that – and there will be a kid's line. So don't – it's not – they're not getting rid of the kid's line altogether. That's still being rebooted in April, May, I think.
And the fact that Disney owns Marvel says that they will have a kid's line.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I think it's just going to be called something else, though. So the thing that they've got a few different Marvel Kids titles.
Right.
I think they're going to be, you know, relaunched as Marvel Kids or something along those lines.
At the moment, no great loss, I think.
No great loss, but it's just interesting. It's just a change in lineup. And maybe, as you say, it could be, you know, finally we're seeing Disney's direct influence on Marvel.
I can't imagine Disney not wanting to have a kids line because of the theme parks and everything else. So
absolutely. And look, the thing is, ultimately, there's a thing I always go back to, which is every comic is somebody's first comic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you've kind of got to have a line that is tailored to getting young readers in and whichever way we can, because we're an aging population, comic book readers.
Yeah.
And we're going to, you know, we're going to die out eventually. You know,
I started my son early.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I need to start breeding just so I can get a new generation of comic book readers going. I'll start franchises behind the panelettes or something.
We could start adopting young wards.
Let's have exactly right. Look around for any parental tragedies. Maybe if there's a circus disaster in town, and then we'll adopt a ward and train them in our bizarre comic book reading ways as we stalk the streets at night.
That's just wrong in every way. I just want you to know that.
You know what? I like a lot of the comic. This is sort of get it off topic, but completely on it. Like a lot of the Batman stories lately have been dealing with that idea of bringing a child into the battle.
Yeah, I've noticed that.
And it is kind of a thing. Whether or not they touch on that in the, because there's been rumors going around that there'd be a Robin figure in next Christopher Nolan Batman film.
I think it would be Nolan's dead body, though, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but whether it's a Robin figure or a sidekick style figure, because
What would be interesting is if they introduced a young Dick Grayson, but didn't actually go to Robin, because that would actually give Bruce something to care about, It would give him something to soften on because he's got this young ward in the house. But we don't need to go into the whole Robin subplot.
No, of course not.
Hmm.
No. It's, you know, it'd be interesting. But, I mean, I think Robin is a really interesting thing because even with when Frank Miller rebooted did the Batman and Robin, and the book still touches on this. All-Star Batman and Robin, sorry. One of the first questions he asked was, why would you bring a child into that battle when you as a child watched your parents get murdered?
Mm.
Now, obviously, this is not something the creators back in the 60, you know, back in the 30s were thinking of.
No, they were trying to get kids in with the young, colorful sidekick.
Yeah. And everybody had a sidekick. There was Speedy, there was Kid Flash, there was Super, you know, there was all sorts of...
Well, Superman had Kid, Crypto and Superboy and Supergirl. Boy, and,
absolutely. There was Wonder Girl. There was, you know, there was a kiddie version of virtually every hero. So that wasn't the reason Robin was created initially. But I do like that modern stories do kind of trying to rationalize this into...
And it's into something that's worth bringing up because it's a very, very strange lifestyle.
It is. And, you know, there's this great look. There's a website I'll plug because I love it. It's called superdickery.com.
Right.
And it's basically, it's and I hope this doesn't go against our explicit tag, but it's perpetuated on the fact that you can bleep this out if you need to, that Superman is a dick.
I think we can say dick. It's okay.
And that, you know, there's
the F bomb before I'll have to bleep out.
There's lots of panels there that are taken out of context, yes, but are actual real comic book panels from, you know, the 60s mainly upwards.
I've seen some of these. Some of these are really funny.
Some of them are hilarious. Now, the idea that, and then there's also this seduction of the innocent going on there you know, Batman and Robin's relationship may not have been just one of, you know, crime fighter and partner.
Yeah.
You know, there's all those things. And when you take these one-off panels, including one of my favorite one, which was like this villain that's got Superman, Green Lantern and Batman standing there. And he's gone, yeah, I've cursed you, so anybody you have touched will have also been afflicted with this thing. And Superman's like, oh, my God, Lois. And then, you know, Hal, you know, Green Lantern's like, oh, my God, Carol. It's like, oh, my God, Robin.
Yes, I remember that. I remember that.
I've got that on my wall at work. So
it's fantastic. Well, it's something that in the 60s, one of the reasons why they added Dick Grayson's aunt to the 60s television show was purely because the studio executives went, why are these two men dressing up and going out and fighting crime and sliding down poles together?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like
they
wanted to add a female character to it, you know?
Well, in the comics, too, you actually started getting them, you know, this really swinging lifestyle because they really wanted to emphasize the fact that these two characters are in no way gay. They're going out nailing it every night.
And the more they protested it, the more they looked gay. That was the only problem.
But there's one on that superdickery.com where it's just kind of Batman suggesting that they all jump into a watering hole full of children and Superman just looking horrified. So there's lots of gems on there like that. But enough about innuendo and thing and superhero comics.
But I love innuendo.
Let's move on to the other little bit of news we've got here, which is apparently Civil War, which ran for 7,023 issues, is my understanding.
Yeah, about that. Yeah. I think I started reading it when I was about 16 months old, you know?
Yeah. And you've only just got it.
I only just finished it, yeah.
Yeah. Apparently Stuart Moore is adapting that into a novel.
How big would that novel be?
Yeah, I think it's probably going to be at least as big as the New 52 collected.
Yeah. I'd be in for that.
Well, one of the interesting comments along that is whether or not there's an eye for it to be, you know, adapted into another medium, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
And perhaps not film, but it's possible they'll make an animated film out of it.
An animated film would be really good. The only problem is, what stories do you tell? I mean, it is an immense story. Yeah. And I don't know if you would be able to fit it into a two-hour film. You know, you'd have to do it. You could do it as a limited series.
Or an animated series, a mini-series of some kind.
Yeah, do it as like a 10-part, 12-part mini-series, like they did with Avengers Earth's Mightiest Heroes recently.
Yes.
It literally ran for 12 episodes or whatever it was. You could do that and then just finish it.
Yeah. No, I think so too. But look, it's, I just thought it was an interesting story because it's not often you see, you know, it happens occasionally. But and I remember it happened back in the 90s as well, and it surprised me, with the Batman Nightfall saga. It got adapted into a novelization, and there were audio tapes of the novelization. It was the weirdest thing.
Well, so did Superman, Last Son of Krypton, got novelized because I read that novel.
Yes, I remember that one.
It was actually not bad.
So it was, you know, it's an interesting move. I don't know what it means, but, you know, just...
keep our eyes open.
We're really light on news. I think we should just move straight on to movie news.
We can do that. That's this.
Movie news. Best investigator reporting on the planet.
Damn straight.
Darn tin. look, every
we're
week
having
there's
point
story.
At this.
Yes. Yes.
Every week there's a story that sucks all the oxygen out of the room, and this week the Dark Knight trailer, Dark Knight Rises trailer was released.
Yes. Now, let's play that, and then we'll talk about it, because I believe you've got some comments.
I do. All right. I have some comments, so I will play that trailer.
Run it for me, please.
Now. Oops. I might try to start that from the beginning instead.
Okay, that's probably a good idea.
Oh, good for you!
How are you going with that trailer?
It's coming.
Oh, say can you see by the dawn's early light?
You are as precious to me as you were to your own mother and father. I swore to them that I would protect you, and I haven't.
The mayor's gonna dump him in the spring.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
But he's a hero.
A war hero. This is peacetime.
You think this can last? There's a storm coming, Mr. Wayne. You and your friends better batten down the hatches. Because when it hits, you're all gonna wonder how you ever thought you could live so large and leave so little for the rest of us.
What does that mean?
Rise.
Gotham is ashes. You have my permission to die.
When Gotham is ashes, you have my permission to die.
Yeah.
Now, there's been a couple of comments that come up about this trailer. First comment is that a lot of people who have seen it at the cinema have been really complaining about how muffled Bane's voice is, and saying that a lot of them are having trouble hearing what he had to say.
And this is in the 8-minute prologue
this
as well.
This is the prequel that's playing. And apparently Warner Brothers executives, I was reading an article today that actually said even the Warner Brothers executives have actually approached Nolan and said, is he going to fix it?
Yeah.
And Nolan actually said no. He said that he wants the audience to work hard, and if they don't understand every word that Bane said, oh well.
Which is this thing, I didn't understand every word Christian Bale said in the last Batman film. So if they're both saying that, we may need subtitles on this thing. And as a good friend of ours said last night, it may be nominated for Best Foreign Language Film next year.
So there's that. But now, you actually, what were your initial reactions on this trailer?
I thought it could have been recut and seen as the a bright young football player whose prospects were struck down by an uprising in Gotham. look, you know, actually just rewatching it again, then there's a lot of really interesting stuff going on in there. I you know, there's obviously, you notice there's people seem to be abseiling down into the Batcave.
Yep.
That's interesting. The scenes with Bruce in jail with everyone reading. I've got this feeling that there's a connection between. I don't know whether they've stated this explicitly already, but between Ducard and Ra's al Ghul and Bane.
Well, there might be, because the character that Marion Cotillard is playing is not actually her character.
Talia.
Her name is something else in the credits, but a lot of people say the rumor is that she is a thinly veiled Talia al Ghul, and that she's actually like a plant.
Yeah, because I suspect, and I might call this now, that there's some of those scenes with him in jail where he's saying, what are they saying? And they're saying, rise.
Yeah.
And perhaps that was, I don't know whether those jail scenes are set like in the 8 years in between the last film and this film, or whether it's a flashback to the time where he spent time in jail, you know, that we saw in Batman Begins. But I suspect that Bane might be another minion of the Shadow organization that was, but he's kind of taken it to the level that Bruce was never willing to go to.
Maybe. I mean, I guess we're really not going to know until we see.
We're not going to know, but I'm calling it early. I suspect that might be part of the storyline. I could be proven completely wrong, but I just feel as though Nolan's going to wrap up all those threads.
Yeah, I think he is going to bring back the Shadow group, because that's a Nolan thing to do, is to bring it full circle. And I actually would not be surprised. I stand by this. I would not be surprised if Liam Neeson walks on.
No, I have a strong feeling that Ducard / Ra's al Ghul will turn up again.
I have this funny feeling he's going to show up somewhere in a cameo. Look, I quite liked this trailer. I thought it was okay. I had a couple of problems with it, like when the football field started to explode.
Yeah.
And I thought, wow, this is really amazing. This just shows you how bad Bane is. And yet, when you actually watch it very closely, it's just the football field that explodes and sinks in. The bleachers are all left intact, which means nobody actually suffered.
Yeah. That we know of. The whole thing
collapsed. I was actually waiting for all of the stands to collapse and all those people to die, and thinking, boy, he's a real badass. And that's not what happened. He just made a big hole in the ground.
Yeah.
So it's like I said, they're going, that wasn't particularly impressive, you know, after all that was said and done. I actually had no problems understanding what he was saying, so that's not a problem. I think his delivery is actually quite menacing. So, I'm curious. I'm really curious to see. Look, there's a lot of anticipation and a lot of hype for this film, and I think that's death to a movie.
Tom Hardy is a phenomenal actor.
He is.
So I think anything that he does is going to be amazing. I did express ages ago some concerns over Anne Hathaway as Selena Kyle / Catwoman, but scenes that we saw of her in there were actually, I really liked. I liked the dialogue she was having there about basically bringing down. She was saying, you know, bringing down the fat cats of Gotham, and seeing Bruce Wayne as one of those, which I thought that was a really interesting.
I completely bought into her, so I had no problem with that at all. I love the fact
people have mentioned Tim Burton in that ballroom scene, reminding them of
the one that's done to Susie and the Banshees.
Yeah,
they're dancing. Yeah, where she says, "Do we have to fight now?"
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great scene. I'm very curious to see it. I'm trying my best to keep my excitement down.
Because
I really think that being too overhyped is going to kill this movie.
Absolutely.
And I think after the last one, we've just got to be careful that we don't elevate this thing to the levels of, like, you know, some sort of, you know, saintly pious thing, and then go, well, he didn't deliver. It's like, you know.
Because I think the thing is with both Batman films, Nolan has had a problem with the ending.
Mm-hmm.
And I did have a big problem on repeat viewings with the denouement of Batman. Sorry, The Dark Knight.
Right.
And that was, as I've always said, it's basically the it's two boatfuls of people that we'd never met before, deciding upon the fate of the other boat full of people we've never met before, while the two main characters and the antagonist and protagonist are nowhere to be seen for a while. That kind of really slows it down for me. I know it's a great scene in and of itself, but it's almost like a short film within a film.
Yeah, you're right a little bit. Yeah, you are. You are right there. It's a good scene. I mean, it works well, but yeah, you're right. It is like a completely different thing.
And it kind of just takes us out of, because really what we're there to see was Batman versus the Joker. That is our story, you know. Mm. And as we saw in that book that we've both read in the last couple of weeks, Joker, he is such a captivating presence. You don't want to take your eyes off him for too long.
No, and so, it's the same in that film. When he was on screen, you wanted to see, just watch him.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So look, little things like that. That said, both of them are brilliant superhero films, you know, the likes that we've never seen before. So I've got high hopes for this third one. And I do, as I said, I really hope that it does tie together all those disparate threads that he's woven in the first two films. But like you, I'm trying to remain cautiously optimistic.
Yeah, yeah, agreed.
Yeah.
Agreed. All right, we need to move on to our pick of the week. We really do, because we're running a little bit over. So here it is.
Well, see how you like this.
What is it, Batman?
Whatever it is, it's awfully funny.
It's the pick of the week.
It certainly is. All right, Richard, tell us about the book.
Well, the book this week is Batman Noella, which we've already explained is by Lee Bermejo, or Lee Bermejo. I'm apologies to Lee if I'm mispronouncing his surname. Mm-hmm. So we're just going to call him Lee from this point onwards.
Fair enough.
Lee's, well, I don't know how many Bat books he's written, but this is the second Bat book of his that we've both read. The first one, he did the art for Joker, mm-hmm. and here he's written and done the art for this beautiful Christmas book.
Although we should state that it borrows heavily from Mr. Charles Dickens.
Which is exactly what I say. The first page has a dedication on here with respect to Charles Dickens. Mm. And it is basically a Christmas Carol story that has been adapted many, many times. But in this case, the very famous story has cast Batman as the Scrooge character,
which is just inspired.
Which is probably, and your son was saying before the show that Batman is a bit of an ass in this book.
Yes.
He, I don't think he used those exact words, but I'm you know,
I'd be surprised if he didn't.
Yeah, well, but basically, you know, Batman has got to the Bob Cratchit character is basically a mule for the Joker.
Hmm.
And Batman's tracked him down and is using him as bait to lure out the recently escaped Joker. Mm-hmm. Not really caring the fact that this guy has a kid who only has his father, and they're very poor. And but Batman doesn't. That it seems to ignore pleas from Alfred and the man himself that you know he's got a kid, so you know, leave him alone. Don't
and
use
there
him
could
to
be
bait.
Extenuating circumstances to what he's doing. Not that he's a bad guy.
No, exactly. Yeah, and now Batman chooses to ignore this initially, but then has what the book describes, or the narrative describes, as a vision. dead and buried for years, just like Scrooge's youthful optimism, to quote from it, is someone who looks a hell of a lot like his dead partner, meaning Robin.
Now, we should kind of backtrack just a little bit and say that the whole book is narrated by somebody telling a story to somebody, mm. which is he's telling the story of A Christmas Carol. And the events of the Batman story are basically taking place to the narration of this story being told. And during this early part, we've established that Batman's got a cough. So he's getting sick because it's winter and snowy and everything else. And so once again, like in everything in Batman, we can kind of bring it down to this kind of realistic arc, which is it could just be a fever dream for all we know.
Mm.
Yeah.
But all we see is just the statue of Robin's costume. And it's kind of like it, and that becomes like the Marley character of the story. It's you know, Scrooge's old partner Marley. In this case, it's Batman's old partner Robin, and so inspiring him and realizing, and you know, what leads into then him being visited by three people.
That's right.
that night. Now, the first of these is, of course, the Ghost of Christmas Past.
Which, can I just say at this point, hubba hubba.
Hubba Hubba, yes, absolutely, is the very sexily drawn Catwoman who we've mentioned before. Now, he draws Catwoman incredibly well.
Yeah. And this is the classic Catwoman in the head-to-toe vinyl with the goggles on.
Yes, and in the hardcover edition of the book, there's notes in the back about his inspirational choices for this, and he said he wanted her costume to look slick and reflective, almost like a piece of obsidian.
Oh, very good.
And I love that. And you know, he's interested in the relationship because of the love-hate dynamic between Batman and Catwoman.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, and even in the Catwoman book, which we referenced before, like, you know, even after they have sex, her narration is like, you know, he'll hate himself for this afterwards.
Mm. I love the fact in this one it's all about come and let's have fun. And she's basically saying, look what I stole. Now you're going to chase me. And he's going, I don't have time for you. And she's going, you're no fun anymore.
And they paint her as the ghost of Christmas past because she is. She's reminding him of those times when he was more fun. And they kind of, in this big splash page, they look at all the ridiculous adventures that you know that Batman had in that kind of 60s fun, including him, you know, Robin bailed up by a tiger.
and you've got Batman in the old grey costume and stuff
like that. Yeah, exactly. And they've got a Catwoman in her old purple costume with the ears and a whip and a sash instead of pants.
And it actually makes me laugh as well because she's wearing the cape, which is a costume that she dons briefly in The Widening Gyre, if you remember.
Yes, exactly.
And she actually says, you always said I look good in a cape.
Yes. I like that. I like that little touch. Yeah. And he's unable to keep up with her because he's got this cough.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was his kind of lesson learned. And when he falls into an alley and is reminded of his parents' death. Mm. And so that's, you know, and where he started on this journey. Now, and as he lands in this alley, he is greeted by the second ghost, the ghost of Christmas present.
Which, of course, is a radiant Superman.
Yes. Now, I don't think I've seen Superman drawn more beautifully than this, except possibly in Alex Ross's renditions of him.
And what's really interesting is, if you read the notes at the end, he refers to the fact that he went back to Kurt Swan's original sketches for his face. And as we've discussed once before a long time ago, Kurt Swan was actually responsible for my favorite run of Superman back in the late 70s, early 80s. Because I always thought he had this. Kurt Swan was a pencilist, and he was amazing sketches of Superman. Yeah. And so it's really interesting to hear this guy say that he actually went back to the original Kurt Swan diagrams to actually get Superman's face, which is
He went to the box shape
box rather than an oval. That's right.
Yeah, to get that really chiseled jaw look. Mm. Okay. And it's fantastic. And he's this really powerful thing, and he acts like the ghost of Christmas present because Batman convinces him to give him a lift back to his car, but by way of, you know, our Bob Cratchit character's house.
Hmm.
He drops him off there. So he actually gets to see what's going on. Batman can see firsthand the relationship between father and son. Hmm. But then Superman kind of carries him over Gotham and says, look, you know, there's decent people down there as well. You know, you have to...
Oh, yeah, he kind of reminds him that Bruce seems to have lost sight of the shades of gray area. For Bruce, it's all everybody is good or bad, because if you do something bad, you're doing that. You are just on a path to more bad. And Superman's basically saying there's actually a lot of good people out there who sometimes do things that aren't necessarily the right thing to do, but that doesn't make them bad people, you know?
That's right. And then one of the things is actually a conversation he hears between Jim Gordon and one of the beat cops, where even Gordon says, in relation to Batman, I'll make no mistake, he's not evil. I'd say he walks a fine line. It's just that sometimes he steps on the side of the line where you or I might hesitate to tread. Mm. And so it's kind of like, you know, he hears for the first time that Gordon occasionally doubts him.
Yeah.
Or doubts his motivations, or doubts doubts the side of the law that he's on. So, you know, for Batman, it's just really awakening thing to hear that he just assumed that everyone revered him, but in fact, some of them actually fear him.
Yeah.
And that's a real wake up call for Batman as well.
Which is kind of weird, because it's exactly why he dresses up like that, to be feared.
Feared, but I think on a deeper level, he wants to be respected by some people.
Yeah.
Because he's still that kind of, you know, son looking for a father's approval in some ways, you know, and he never had that. And then the third ghost, of course, can only be one person.
Absolutely. And I love the way it's actually worded by the storyteller, who basically says that he never bought into the idea that the third ghost never said anything. Mm. And so he wondered whether or not the third ghost was actually just the person themselves. You know what I mean? It's not like there was actually a third person who never spoke, you know? And I liked, and I kind of like that. So he's basically saying the third person is basically death.
Yeah. You know?
And I think it's a really interesting idea. But of course, we have Joker dragging him to a grave.
Not saying a word except for a little snort and giggle. And it's a beautifully drawn Joker. It's the same, similar Joker. He's got that kind of bow-legged walk when he's approaching that he looks really sincere, like he does in Brian Azzarello's Joker.
We
don't really see the Joker's face, but he's a very similar
well, we see it just as he's about to throw him in the grave. And he's a little bit more cartoonified than the Azzarello book.
He's still got a bit of the scarage happening up the side.
It's close.
But it's a good thing. And then there's it follows what is effectively, you know, the future, or what would Gotham be like. It's kind of almost, it's a Wonderful Life moment. What would Gotham be like? The future of Batman. Oh, actually, no, it's his future. If Batman continues on the path that he's on and people fear him rather than, and when he starts to slip, people remember him as he was at the end and not the ideals that he had at the beginning. And that's Batman's worst fear, is that Gotham descends. Basically, that whole escalation argument.
It's almost kind of poking a stick at Frank Miller as well, isn't it?
It is. It is very much, actually.
Because Frank Miller proposed that concept of the future Batman, where he is a little bit more brutal and stuff like that. So it's kind of prodding Frank Miller a little bit, saying, see, this is your future.
It says here, you know, Scrooge had lived his life as a man who could turn on you at any moment, leave you stranded or hurt. He'd been the type of man that people only feared that he'd break down on them again, you know, and that's the thing. And, you know, you see in the sequence Gordon being jailed for, you know, 30 years for aiding and abetting a wanted criminal and being Batman.
I love the fact that there's that riot scene in the street that's just preceding it, where people are actually tattooed with bats and stuff, and they're basically hitting people with baseball bats. And the other side of the gang are all dressed like Joker.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's just gone insane, you know?
Yeah, and I think that's, you know, a great sequence, and I think it's beautifully drawn, and it's and it leads to a very simple couple of panels, but also beautifully drawn. They say you're born and you die alone. Even if that's true, would you want it to be? If you had a chance to change, get it right, what would you do? What would you fight for? Sometimes it takes dying to teach a fella how to live. And it's Batman bursting up through the grave.
And let's just throw in very quickly the tombstone that Joker put above him. It says, here lies a bat. He died boring, predictable, and nobody loved him. It's just such a Joker thing to scratch into a tombstone. You know?
Yeah.
just very quickly, my son pointed it out, which I never noticed before, but if you actually look at the cover of the book, there is actually a gravestone on the back cover of the book that is actually Joker's face on it. And if you look very, very closely on the headstone, it actually says R.I.P. Bob Kane. So I thought that was Nikki pointed that out. And I went, boy, that's a nice little tribute to Bob Kane on the back.
That's nice, yeah.
Anyway, so I love Batman crawling out of the earth.
It is great. It's a
great image.
And I love the very next page, you've got a knock at the door and the kid running going, Santa, is that you? And then you get ho, 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 and it's the Joker.
And it's a one-page, it's a terrifying picture.
It's basically, it's Jack Nicholson in The Shining.
Yeah, except with
He's Johnny shot, basically.
It's terrifying. I mean, the eye and everything, it's the way it's drawn is just evil. And especially the fact they've got ho, ho, ho coming out of his mouth. You know? we have the turning point of the story.
Yeah, so there's a scuffle between, the father finally decides, no, he's not going to, you know, it's basically the point where the Joker threatens his son. He decides to take a swing at the Joker, who gets the better of him very quickly.
Yep.
And attempts to shoot him, and then it's at this point that Batman has to make a decision. You know, is he going to interfere? And as they say, see, outside forces have come into play, something elemental. And now Batman bursts through the window here in a shot, and you mentioned Frank Miller before, that looks very much like something out of the Dark Knight Returns.
Dark Knight Returns, yeah, it does. It's the whole stance and everything.
Even the boots and the way he's got the very sort of floppy utility belt there.
Mm-hmm.
The way the boots have all the straps and laces along the back of them, it reminds me very much those combat boots. It reminds me very much of Frank Miller look there. So
talk about the bat suit for a second, because it kind of pushed through this book pretty quick. I love the fact that the bat suit is drawn as this absolutely functional battle suit.
So
you can actually see the armor plates in it.
Yes.
And you know, it's like everything about his suit looks like this has been built to sustain a hit. You know what I mean?
Yeah, everything's there for a purpose. You can actually see, even on the helmet, you can see the shapes and everything that looks like it.
Incredibly detailed work. It's just beautifully drawn. I can't get over the artwork. This guy's artwork is amazing.
Yeah.
In fact, if I had my choice, my next thing I'd like to see him do is a graphic novel on Superman.
Given those couple of panels that we got of Superman, or even Catwoman for that matter.
Or Catwoman, yeah.
If he wants to send the uniform. But yes, I would love to see him do Superman. Anybody, really. But I will have to check out. Apparently, he's worked on things like Hellblazer.
Oh, really? Okay.
So I'll have to go and check that out. And he did a lot of covers for a lot of Vertigo crime graphic novels, including Filthy Rich, and he's worked with Brian Azzarello on other things as well. So, I'm interested to go and check out some of his other work. But yeah, that's as you said, that's the turning point in the scene. It's a very beautifully drawn thing. And the father, after Batman bursts through the window, the father gets hold of the gun. And it's here that Batman kind of gives the epiphany moment, which is that says to him, no, you don't want to shoot him because you're not a criminal, and show your son the kind of man that you are, rather than, you know, the man that he'll end up being. So the father decides in that moment that he wants to give his son someone to believe in. He wants to give him a hero, and decides not to shoot the hero, not to shoot Joker, and Joker goes off to jail. And
we state Joker's last line, which is fabulous, where he goes, "Boring. Neither of you two know how to have a good time."
Good time. Yeah,
I just love him. I love the motivations of Joker. Like when the guy first points the gun at me, he goes, "Yeah, let it rip." You know, he's just nuts, and I love that.
Scene in Joker as well, where he's just gone on this mass killing spree. And he's gone in a bank robbery, and then he just sticks the gun in his mouth and pulls the trigger, and it goes click. And you're never quite sure whether he knew he was out of bullets or not. You know?
Yeah, that was wonderful. The randomness of that book is amazing.
Yeah, it's a great book. And you know, he's not the main character. Neither Batman or Joker are the main character in this story.
Hmm.
But it is, and it sort of ends with. Your typical Christmas roundup. Everybody's great,
but we also have that wonderful conclusion to A Christmas Carol, which is Bruce Wayne realizes that he kind of has to make amends, and so you know he delivers the Christmas tree to the Cratchit character, and he gives him a pay rise and you know, all this sort of stuff, and it's like you get this wonderful moment where it's like he is still human. There is something still human underneath Batman.
And they describe him as saying, like, you know, like a prisoner who just got out of the joint. He felt like he'd, you know, a free man, and he wanted to do everything on the first day. So, and I love that description. So he gets a tree delivered to the father's place, and seems to, via his Bruce Wayne guys, gets him a new job. And
also love the fact that there's actually a shot in the background, where The Wayne Enterprises guy are delivering the tree, and he hands him the contract for the new job, which gives him, you know, a good 401k and all that sort of stuff. And in the background, there's a guy measuring the window.
Yeah.
I just love that.
That is terrific. And, you know, and Jim Gordon, you know, having a drink with his cop buddies and, you know, and the child, you know, running around the streets fairly happy. And then on the final page, is the reveal of who the narrator has been the whole time.
Hmm.
And it's Bob.
Telling his son the story.
Story, which is wonderful.
And I love the fact that they leave you with a question. And I love the fact that the last line in the entire book is he says, so what do you think? He says, what's the moral of the story? And he just leaves it at that. You know, he doesn't try and deliver a moral. He just basically says, what do you think?
And you know, this is a perfect Christmas story. You know, it's in the DCU. If you, I mean, I would have thought, you know, reading the brief description when we first announced this couple, we thought it would be great, seeing, you know, a Christmas Carol in the Batman universe, but it had the potential to be something disastrous. But it's such a wonderful book.
It is, and look, it's really kind of delivered to me. Both an artist and with Joker prior to this, because same artist, but with Joker, a couple of really great writers, and I think the Lee Bermejo and Azzarello are both people we want to keep our eyes on, because they seem to really revel in the short form graphic novel. I want to see them continue doing that, because it gives them the chance to really put that detail in.
Absolutely.
Yeah, Lee Bermejo is a great writer. He's, you know, he's taken Dickens and he's done something really special with it.
Apparently, he's completely self-taught as well.
Wow, as an artist as well?
Yeah, apparently he's self-taught with little formal art training.
Wow, that's impressive.
He started as an intern at Wildstorm.
That's impressive, considering the art in these two books.
Yeah.
I'm highly impressed by that. Look, it's a great book. If you can get a hold of it, get a hold of it. It is well worth having a look at, and it's a great Christmas read. So if you can get it within the next few days in particular, and read it over this Christmas season, I think you'll have a really nice time with it.
Absolutely.
And for those who actually did read it already and followed along with us, I hope you enjoyed it and agree with us on our take of this book, because it's very good.
Richard. Now, this wasn't the first Batman Christmas story, though.
Okay, tell me more.
I've got another. the first time Santa Claus did visit Batman and Robin back in the 1960s, and I have a little bit of that here.
Oh, let me hear.
What's wrong, Robin? Tired? Dizzy?
I had a strange feeling, Batman, as if visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
They should be, Boy Wonder. It's almost Christmas. Ha, 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 ha.
Welcome to Gotham City, Mr. Claus.
Why, call me Santa Claus, Batman. Everybody else does. Say, you tell me where the Batcave is and I'll leave a little present in your stocking.
If you can't trust Santa, whom can you trust? We can't tell you here, Mr. Claus, but we'll telephone you at the North Pole on the Batphone.
Good. I'll get to the Batcave if I have to slide down a bat pole instead of a chimney. Merry Christmas!
Merry Christmas, Santa!
And say hello to those 8 tiny reindeer for us.
I will! Merry Christmas! Merry Christmas, everybody!
Oh my God, was there nothing they wouldn't do?
No.
And Nicholas has just written down a little note here saying he sounds drunk.
Visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
Oh, man. On that note, I think we need to wrap this up.
That's because
a freeze is coming.
No. Soundboard off.
Mr. McGee, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yes.
Oh, good for you.
Best investigator reporting on the planet.
All right.
I'm out, man. I'm out.
All right. What is our book? Now, we're going to take a week off because of the Christmas holidays. But we've got homework for you in that week off. We're going to do the series of books. Now, it's four books, but they're big books. So it's going to take a bit of reading. Mark Waid and Alex Ross's Kingdom Come is going to be our next book club to pick
talking
of the week.
Talking about beautiful artwork.
Talking about beautiful artwork and really in-depth storytelling. So it's a great series, and I can't wait to talk to you about it in detail. So that will be in 2 weeks. We will do Kingdom Come. Richard, if people wanted to find out more about you, where would they do that?
Well, they could just ask me. But otherwise, they could go to my website, which would be a good start. It's therealbits.com. That's RELEbits.com. Or they could just hit me up on Twitter at DVDBits. I am there 24/7. Even when I'm sleeping, my thumb tweets, random snoozes.
I can imagine what those tweets are. Finger twitches on the keyboard.
While I'm sleeping, I have
visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
All right.
That's my favorite quote of the
year. It's wonderful. I also love your Christian Bale pull there. I think that's very good too.
Yeah, no, there's so many things you could take from that, Christian. That's a couple of years old now.
That's actually that's the Terminator rant, isn't it?
It's interesting. It wasn't on the set of Batman, which would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
That was quite a famous.
Hit us with Christian Bale again.
Okay. Like, yeah.
Oh, good for you!
That went off twice.
I love that. All right, if you want to find out more about me, just go to geekactually.com. There's a follow us link right there where you can find out all about me. So you can find out my Twitter and emails and all that sort of stuff. We do have an email address for this show, so if you actually did manage to get hold of Batman Noel and want to let us know what you thought of it or anything else we've talked about, comics@geekactually.com is that email address, or our voicemail is 0280113167. Also wanted to announce that our Facebook page now has its domain name. So if you want to put comments up or actually talk to us on our Facebook page, it is facebook.com/behindthepanels.
And I've created a little page tab in there at the moment, and it's still a work in progress, but I'm listing all of the issues that have come and all the ones that are coming up as well. So if you want to read ahead, and David and I will plan out over the Christmas break what our next couple of issues will be. So if you want to read way ahead, if you've already read Kingdom Come and you want to read what's coming next, you can check that out too.
Fantastic. So there you go. That's our plans over the Christmas break. And I think we're done.
Absolutely.
Late breaking news. I'm getting a little note here written to me again. I've got this little elf sitting next to me writing notes. Okay. We should mention it because it is Batman. Nicholas wanted to mention to us that his Batman Lego animated Batman film, his opus that he's been working on for almost 6 months, is almost finished. So if you go to his YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/NickyMcVeigh, keep your eyes open because it's called Smile, and it will be coming out in the next few weeks. So
it's got some terrific voice acting work, and I can tell you that now.
It does. It's actually got terrific voice acting work by a couple of hosts of the show, actually.
Yes. At least two of the hosts
of the show.
Two
of the hosts of this show have appeared in it. So. All right, Richard.
It's really good stuff. Look out, Fred. I mean, Nicky does great work on those.
Yeah, helping him do some final cuts on it and some last-minute touches and tweaks on it the other day. It's looking really good. I can't wait till it actually launches.
I've saw bits and pieces months ago, so I'm looking forward to it. And there's a trailer up there now, isn't there?
There is a trailer up there now, yeah. So you can have a look at the trailer as well. So, yes, keep your eyes open for that. That should be sometime in January, probably. He's actually waiting for his composer. I can't believe my son actually says this, but he's waiting for his composer to come back with some music.
I think it's completely reasonable.
Absolutely. It's amazing. All right, Richard, we're going to see you in 2 weeks. Have a very Merry Christmas.
You too, David. Have a very Batman Christmas.
Have a very Batty Christmas with sugar plum fairies.
No, just make sure over Christmas that
visions of sugar plums were dancing in my head.
Oh, yes. Oh, I didn't play. Yes. There it is.
oh, good yes. for you.
All right, before we go crazy again, we're going to get out of here. See you all in the new year, people.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.